So what led you to Welch College, formerly Free Will Baptist Bible College, whenever you first went there and later to become a faculty member?
Well, it's not hard to answer the first part, especially, because the short answer would be that my mom is what led me to Free Will Baptist Bible College as a student. I was in high school and thinking about college, and I loved things like math and science. And so I had the idea I wanted to be an engineer. And of course, I lived in South Carolina, and on the East Coast, Georgia Tech stands for engineering. So I had the idea I wanted to go to Georgia Tech. My mom learned about Free Will Baptist Bible College, which was, you know, very young in those days. The school was started in 42, and we're talking about 1949, so it was only 7 years old. So she learned about it and thought it was very appealing and really wanted me to live for the Lord. And so she sort of made a bargain with me. She said, "Bob, if you'll go to the Bible college for a year, I'll pay your way through Georgia Tech." I thought that's a pretty good deal. So I figured I could stand most anything for a year, whether I liked it or not. So I went to Free Will Baptist Bible College for a year. That was the plan at the beginning. And somehow or other during that fall semester, fairly late in the fall semester, 1949. I still remember that it was in one of the hall prayer meetings one night. The Lord had been dealing with me. I was seeing in the students there something I wasn't used to seeing in the area where I grew up, and that is young people who really wanted to live for the Lord and do the Lord's bidding. And the Lord had been dealing with me about that. And so that night in that hall prayer meeting, I surrendered to the Lord to do whatever he wanted me to do. And from that point on, of course, I stayed at Free Will Baptist Bible College and graduated. It really turned my life around. And I appreciated the work of the college so very much, what it did for me, until I began to feel like that I would like to be a part of that and to have that kind of impact on the lives of young people and influence them in those ways. So I decided when I graduated to go to graduate school, which I did. Went to Bob Jones University graduate school. At that time, that was about the only place we could go, because there wasn't any accreditation involved, you know, and so on. But a couple of the men at the college, Dr. Johnson, the president, and Brother Thigpen, who was one of the main teachers, both of them had been to Bob Jones, so that made it appealing too. So I went to Bob Jones to graduate school and really found myself stimulated with the work in the master's program and then continuing on into the PhD program. So I began to feel that my calling was to go back to the college and to teach there and to try to contribute to the same kind of practical effects in the lives of other young people that the school had contributed to me. After 2 years there, the financial situation was getting pretty desperate. My mom's finances were limited. And of course, I didn't have any financial resources to draw on other than what I might earn. I was married, already had three children, so I decided it was time. And I learned at that time also that Laverne Miley, who was teaching Greek up to that point, and I had had him for Greek, but I learned that he had decided to leave the college and go to graduate school to become a medical doctor as a medical missionary. And so I decided it was a good time for me to make application. So I wrote to Dr. Johnson and applied for a position to teach at Free Will Baptist Bible College and was accepted. And so we moved there in the summer of 1955 and been in Nashville ever since.
So what exactly did you teach while you were at the college?
Well, New Testament. My program, my master's program was in theology, but the PhD program I was working on was in New Testament with a concentration in the Greek text. So Greek and other New Testament courses I always considered my main thing. So I taught Greek, first and second year Greek, and then I taught some Bible courses like Pauline writings. Pauline I taught for many, many, many years, and that was always one of my favorite courses along with the Greek courses. But also while I was in graduate school, I had some philosophy courses, and those really appealed to me too. So I asked them after I got back teaching, I asked them at the school if I could start a philosophy class, Introduction to Philosophy. And they agreed to let me do that, and I started teaching Introduction to Philosophy. And that also was one of my favorites, and I taught that for years and years as well. Then later on, I went into administration and was only teaching maybe two courses a semester, but Greek and Pauline writings and philosophy would be the three most important courses to me, but all through the years, I would also teach some other courses at various times, either Bible courses or things like that.
So what exactly is the Free Will Baptist Historical Commission, and how does it benefit our denomination, and what work in particular are you planning on, well, are you doing right now as the chairman?
Well, okay, the Historical Commission, first of all, in the structure of the National Association of Free Will Baptists, it's a commission. Commissions are not as important or large as the boards. The boards really conduct the main business of the National Association. But the commissions are smaller groups. All the commissions that I'm aware of have only five members. And they're charged with studying various things or producing various things in certain areas. And the Historical Commission is charged with preserving and promoting Free Will Baptist history. So the whole purpose of the commission then is to provide incentives to our people to learn more about Free Will Baptist history. As you may know, there were two main Free Will Baptist denominations, one in the north, starting in 1780 with the church founded by Benjamin Randall in New Hampshire. The other one in the south, starting well before that, 1727 by Paul Palmer in North Carolina. The folks in the north did a pretty good job of keeping up with their history, writing books, preserving their history, and that sort of thing. Folks in the South didn't do a very good job at all. And I'm sure the culture of the North and the culture of the South had some bearing on that. So anyway, the Historical Commission tries to include both. But the need is even greater in terms of the Southern history. And as far as our denomination today is concerned, the Southern history is really more important than the Northern history is. So anyway, our Historical Commission, one of the things it's doing is to sponsor and oversee the work of the Free Will Baptist Historical Collection. And the collection, which is maintained on the campus at the college in the library, has as its goal to collect anything written by anybody who's a Free Will Baptist or about Free Will Baptist, anything that will promote the understanding of Free Will Baptist history. So the collection involves books, it involves the minutes of our various organizations, it involves all the kinds of periodicals that are published and have been published within the denomination, and any sorts of papers and other artifacts, for that matter, that have a bearing on Free Will Baptist history. And that has grown over the past number of years to be quite a large collection. And one of the things I do personally is to serve as the librarian or the curator, whatever word you want to use. There's no official title, and it's volunteer work that I'm not paid for, but to maintain that collection, to keep all the materials cataloged, and to work in the binding and preserving of materials and so on. So the idea of the collection is to keep the kinds of materials that are needed so that people can do research into Free Will Baptist history, whatever aspects of history they would like to do so. In addition to maintaining the collection, the commission also sponsors a website that's called fwbhistory.com. Is it com or org? Com.com. And the website has basically the same kind of purposes that the collection does and that the commission is working for. It's promoting the understanding of Free Will Baptist history. And that website has only been up and running about 2 or 3 years, but it really has grown and has a lot of materials available. Many of them, there are links on the website to the actual resources. That is, you can actually read the books. One of the projects we're especially involved in right now is to have all of the minutes of all the organizations in Free Will Baptist denomination scanned into PDF files that are word searchable. And those are available on the computer in the history room at the college, but they're also available on the website. So that, for instance, now I say they're available. They're being made available as we get them scanned. We're in the process. This is something we just started this past year. But we already have, for example, we already have all the minutes that we have of the state of Alabama. That includes the Alabama State Association, but it also includes all the district associations within the state of Alabama that make up the state association. So that from your computer at your house, if you want to, you can go look at all those minutes, going all the way back into the 1800s and so on. Now we don't have complete sets of most of them. We do have usually complete sets of most of the state associations. But the older district associations, the ones that go back into the 19th century, for example, we don't often have complete sets of. But again, that's a part of our work, is to try to get together those complete sets. For example, I just had a fellow in Alabama who wasn't willing to part with a number of those minutes that he has, but he was willing to send them to us so that we could scan them and add them into the scanned copies that we have. So they're available now. So one of the big things these days, as you know, is technology. And that's the way our generation is going and our culture is going. And so we're trying to make the historical collection materials available by technology just as quickly as we can, and have made tremendous strides in that within just the past several months. So that's really one of the key areas of focus these days.
So in your most recent book, Discipleship, The Expression of Saving Faith, in the first chapter you say we must make Paul a canon without the canon. What exactly did you mean by that statement?
Well, when I say we must not make Paul a canon within the canon, first of all, when I'm speaking of the canon, I'm speaking of the completed scriptures, the 37 books in the Old Testament and the 26, is it, in the New Testament? Mm-hmm. So I'm speaking of that as our canon. Well, I think sometimes some people become so occupied with, say, for instance, Paul's epistles, which are very theological and teach us a great deal of what we know of Christian theology, certainly. But sometimes I think people become so occupied with Paul's letters, the 13 epistles in the New Testament that Paul wrote, that they let that become the whole of Christian thinking and theology and almost ignore the rest of the New Testament, especially the teaching of Jesus, which seems to me to be at least as important as the teaching of Paul in that regard. Not that those two are in disagreement, but they complement one another, and either one of them may very well fill out various kinds of details that the other one doesn't touch on and clarify what the other one is dealing with and so on. So I don't think we should let Paul's approach to justification by faith overwhelm things Jesus said or that James might have said or that the writer of Hebrews said or whatever. The epistles of John or the epistles of Peter. I think we have to take the whole New Testament and try to determine as best we can from the whole New Testament a comprehensive view of what it teaches us in terms of our theology and particularly in terms of what's required to be a Christian, to be saved, rather than just letting Paul's teaching on justification by faith by itself dictate the terms in which we understand everything else. Each of them has an important contribution to make. They don't contradict one another, but I think they do complement one another, and that we have to look at the whole rather than just look at Paul. So that's what I mean when I say we shouldn't make Paul's letters a canon within the canon. It's the whole Bible, and particularly the whole New Testament. When we think of Christian theology, that should determine our theology rather than just looking at Paul. The reason that's important is because it's certainly clear that Paul teaches salvation by grace through faith alone, and all of us believe in that. And yet, when you look at what Jesus said about salvation, or when you look at what the writer of Hebrews says, or James, or Peter, or whatever, then you begin to realize that there are other aspects of this that we need to include in our thinking. And once you do that, you can find some of that in Paul too, so that it helps to look at the whole.